Hello and welcome to this edition of Conversations from the ANF Network. In this episode, I speak to adult adoptee Julie McGrew. She was adopted in the US with her twin sister and grew up in the 1960s knowing she was adopted. She shares her story of fighting to get access to her birth records and the names of her biological parents, and the support that she received through a post-adoption support group. As always, if you have experience of adoption, fostering or special guardianship from any perspective, personal or professional, and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through the Facebook page, the app formerly known as Twitter, or you can email us at anfpodcast@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Julie Ryan McHugh. I am an adult adoptee from the United States. I'm also a twin. And my story is unique in the sense that I was adopted through Catholic Charities with my twin sister. They had a strong policy of adopting multiple birth siblings together. So I grew up in a family with three adoptees and three biological kids to my parents. So we were truly a blended family. I never had the sense that there was any preference to one set of the kids or another. My parents were very strict Catholics. Everybody toed the line and had their chores and got an allowance. And every once in a while, though, around our birthday, my sister and I would get pulled into the family living room and have a conversation with our parents about our adoption. Were we happy? Did we have a curiosity about our adoption circumstances? Now, keep in mind, we were adopted through a closed adoption, which meant my parents were given nothing, no information. Our birth date, yes, they were told we were fraternal twins. Turns out we're not fraternal twins, but that's part of the story that evolves. And they professed a sincere willingness to help my sister and I someday if we decided to figure out our adoption story. So when I was 30 years old, I sent a letter to Catholic Charities in Chicago and asked if I could have any information about my background. At that time, I had four children, and everybody wondered where, their looks came from, their personalities, whatever. I got a letter back that said, no information can be shared at this time. Fast forward to 2011, the state of Illinois changed their adoption laws. And anybody that was born after a certain date could access their original birth records. At that same time, which sometimes life has a way of being very synchronistic, I was sent for a breast biopsy. And so the threat of breast cancer just really flared everything up for me. My husband insisted that I try to figure some kind of information out. And then I learned that the state of Illinois had changed their policies. So my twin sister and I together decided we'd go down this path of trying to get our medical history and family background. And that 5-year journey is what my first book is about, Twice a Daughter, A Search for Identity, Family, and Belonging. It's about this health crisis that I was having. And I came to find out that my adoptive mom really didn't want me to go down this path. So all those years of feigning support, this really rattled her, and our relationship was in jeopardy. In the meantime, the information I found on my original birth record was not helpful. Back in that era of closed adoption, birth moms could make up an alias and put that on the original birth record so that they weren't discovered and they could hide their secret for as long as they wanted. She also, so along with her alias, she wasn't required to put my birth father's name on it. So the information that I thought was going to help me didn't help me at all. And I ended up working with a confidential intermediary under the auspices of a judge in a state program to try and open all my records. They had to go back to Catholic Charities and get all the files. And there it launched the search that was a roller coaster ride. And it took 5 years. I used the intermediary, a private investigator, another search agency, and also a genealogist to try and figure out the story. It has a crazy ending, like most adoption stories do, in the sense that I found some siblings that I didn't know I had. And those right. siblings were literally right next door. And we knew each other, but didn't have any idea that we were related. Wow. So the story, you know, there's a lot of sad things that happen and a lot of rejection. At the end, though, because of this connection with my siblings, and because my adoptive parents knew these people, it healed this rift that had happened between my adoptive mom and I. It was one of those, we call them God wink moments, that, you know, just magical how the healing and family togetherness was fixed. So at the end of the day, I did get both sides of my medical history and family history, and have relationships with a good many of my birth siblings. That was not without a lot of anxiety and a lot of frustration. But for the most part, my story turns out really well. But as I like to say, the best part of the whole journey is I started off life with a full sibling. I'm finishing up life with this beautiful relationship with my twin sister, who we mutually support each other all the time. And I could not have gone through all of the ups and downs of that search without somebody that really understood every emotion that I was feeling. There yeah. was heartache and joy and wonder and awe and just astounding surprise at the very end.
Wow. I mean, that's a whistle stop tour through what was sounds like a lifetime of discovery and twists and turns. So, and I don't know you. I mean, it's an interview, don't know you, but you seem, from what our conversation before we started and this conversation, it seems like you are sort of hardwired as an optimist, and you know, your glass is half full. But can I unpick a few things that you were talking? There's lots of questions. So are you okay for me to ask you a few questions?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you. It would be a rubbish interview if you'd said no, wouldn't it? That would have ended that straight away. No, that's all you're getting. I was, when you were talking about your experience as a child, you know, you talked about around your birthdays and your, you know, around that time of year, you would be sat down with your sister. Which sounds quite progressive, you know, to a modern ear, thinking that would have been the 60s, 70s, that sort of time.
Yep, 60s.
We'll be discreet about, you know, all the dates and, but did that seem, was that unusual? And do you think, was that, knowing what you know now, and obviously that you described a rift, do you think that was a genuine expression of you wanting to search? Or worse, your search?
I think... well, I actively worked with a social worker at Catholic Charities to understand my adoptive parents' behavior. Just my mom, really. My dad was terrific through the whole thing. But also some things that happened with my birth mother. And it's an interesting thing to hear the perspective of a professional that works in these situations all the time. And her comment was that your parents had that conversation with you that they knew they were supposed to have, that they felt good about having as a parent.
Yeah.
However, when the day came for that situation to unfold, it was the fear or something they had just never thought would happen. And I had a sibling, one of my parents' biological kids passed away when I was a teenager. And I am very cognizant of the fact that I think my mom thought that she was going to lose two more daughters in some way, some twisted way that grief and loss takes over our heart. And I took it as a personal challenge with her to prove to her our relationship was never going to change, no matter who I brought in my life. And I really did feel like I had my heart was big enough to have two mothers, to love two people. I mean, I have four children, and each time I was pregnant, I thought, oh, how am I going to love this one as much as the other one or the other two? And you do. You find a way to broaden your horizon and take people into your life. And I think I had that attitude towards my birth mom. I wanted her in my life. I wanted to know who she was. I wanted to understand her. And I couldn't understand why my adoptive mom didn't want me to have that. Also, in this culture of adoption, and I think the conversation that we're having on this podcast and other podcasts about adoption in the United States is so important, because there's so many people touched by adoption, but there's so many people that don't get it. They don't understand how complicated it is and how nuanced. So I had a friend that I was telling this crazy story about finding my birth mom and then trying to find my birth father. And she basically came out and said, you know, why are you doing this? I said, well, I have this health issue and I would like to have my medical history and I want to know my background. And she goes, but don't you feel a loyalty to your adoptive parents? I was like dumbfounded. I said, of course I do. I'm not throwing away my relationship with my parents. I'm broadening who I am. And so it's, you know, there's so many things that we as a society need to dispel ideas.
Yeah,
I don't feel disloyal for having gone down this path. I don't, not one bit. And the interesting thing with my adoptive mom, she wrote my birth mom a couple letters. They exchanged letters back and forth. There was no hard feelings at the end. But my mom is going to be 91 next month. And she's got a little bit of some memory issues. So I took her out for lunch. We're having a cup of coffee and a sandwich, and showstopper, she says, you know, why is it that I don't have a relationship with your birth mom? Honestly, I just about lost my teeth. I said, well, mom, there was a time that you didn't want her in our lives. And she goes, I'm so sorry for that. I would really like to know more about her. And we had this whole beautiful conversation. Keep in mind, this is 10 years later that we're having this conversation. But I think that's the patience sometimes we have to have with the people we care about. Eventually, there's a coming around to understanding. And we just have to be who we are.
Yeah, I was reminded, I am an adoptive parent, as I said, and we'd sort of had similar conversations with our children as they were growing up, saying that, you know, we would be very supportive of their searching, and which was fine until there was one moment on it was Christmas Day, and they had reconnected with some family members, and they Christmas evening they said, oh, we're going to go out and see them, and they did. And I remember thinking, oh, well, that's intellectually, I totally was on board with the experience. But I couldn't change how I actually felt, which was a sense of fear, anxiety, stress. Or am I going to lose my children? And I think that sometimes that stuff has to be hidden from our children. We need to kind of go and do that. And I think, you know, and sometimes that's easier said than done. And personalities and all of those sort of things get into the mix. So that's really fascinating.
And it is hard on us as the adoptee to make this connection with these people that you're related to, but you don't know. There's an awkwardness and no bond whatsoever other than your genes. So it's very awkward for us too. My birth mom, I speak to her often enough, but I don't visit her very often. And I'm very cognizant of the parameters around our relationship. She was the youngest or the oldest of 13, and nobody knew her secret. She went with a friend to Chicago. She stayed in a women's home, and she worked with Catholic Charities. She didn't know she was pregnant with twins. She never saw us. She never held us. And so there was no bond that I had with her in any shape or form. But because she kept this secret and this shame about being an unwed mother, and she was very Catholic, so there was no even question that she wasn't considering abortion or anything like that in any way. But there was a lot of shame surrounding that, and certainly adoption laws for her too. But she got over some of it, but not all of it. There were some siblings that she didn't tell. She didn't want them to know. When we go to visit her, she doesn't sign us in her senior center guest book as her daughters. I think she just signs relatives from visiting. So yeah. There's some things that, because she can't quite make that step, our relationship is still a little stilted. It's not how I am with my mom, the mom that raised me and still in my life. And I think we have to trust those bonds of the people that we live with every day. I like to talk about kinship too in this same conversation. Mm-hmm. My parents had a lot of really good friends that they did a lot of social things with when we were growing up. And there was one couple that we called aunt and uncle, and they weren't, obviously, biologically, but not even was I related to them through adoption. I still think of them as my aunt and uncle because they were so dear to us. Mm. They took us on trips with them. They had only boys. We were these two twins that were very unique and kind of fun to watch. But I still think of them as family, and no way was I related to them in any way. So I think the broader definition of what we can call family is expanding. And I think people are realizing that who you're biologically related to, who you grow up with, like we could talk about foster care. This is a good branching off point. I mean, I think family has a broader definition than what society has come to think of it as.
I think sometimes as well, people who aren't experiencing or living it, that they look inside and they can't imagine. Like you were mentioning, you know, when you were giving birth to your children, you're going, I can't imagine having more love to share it out equally. And I think sometimes people look into adoptive and fostering relationships and kind of go, but do you love them the same? Can it be the same? Can it be the same level or intensity of love or strength of love? I don't know. I don't know what the technical measurement of love is. Maybe there isn't one. People often have a genuine curiosity, don't they? They'll look into your relationships and your family and your circumstances and go, some of that's peculiar. Like your friend's comment saying, you know, why would you do that to your mum? Mom.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was going to ask you, I'm sort of slightly intrigued by this unique, there's a unique element in the terms of you sort of growing up with your twin. And you sound like your journey's been together, both in terms of you living together, adopted together, living together, and then searching together. And has that always been, have you always been in lockstep together, or has there been times when you're creeping ahead or you're lagging behind? And has there been difficult moments there?
Well, one of the things that's interesting to me, even though we were told we were fraternal, we did genetic testing when we were going through all this stuff with our birth parents, and we're identical twins. So somewhere along the line, somebody checked the wrong box, either at the hospital or at the adoption agency or whatever, where we look and always have looked so much alike. When we went to college together, and there would be somebody that I didn't know that would say hello, and I would say hello back because I knew they thought I was my sister. Our relationship is like a passenger driver thing. You know, sometimes I let her take the wheel. She's in charge. I'm very happy if she wants to pick up my mother's Christmas gift and I don't have to do it. And then sometimes I'm in charge. So like this adoption search, it was me that had the breast biopsy. It was my husband that was pushing me to do this. And she was working full time. I was a stay-at-home mom. It became my job. For those 5 years, I did all the research. I did all the legwork. But at the end of the day, she was my first phone call. I would call her and say, this is what happened today. This is where we're at. What do you think we need to do next? Should we fire this search agency and hire the private investigator? Every step of the way, we talked about it and we reached a decision together. So we are almost always in lockstep. We don't always have to have a conversation. Sometimes it's just nonverbal stuff, like, you know, a look or what have you. Sometimes regular siblings have that nonverbal bond, but no, it's she married her high school sweetheart. So I've known her husband for 13 years. Since I was 13, and even he is amazed sometimes, we'll show up with the same shoes on, similar outfits, and he just laughs. He's just like, you know, we're a wonder to everyone around us, but also to ourselves, because I wish I knew how that happened, that you show up with the same shoes. I don't know.
It's a mystery, isn't it? And I think some of those deeply unethical experiments that were carried out on adopted children.
And triplets.
Yeah. Really concerning. So, you know, obviously that's not your experience, but you can imagine that it must feel very close to the knuckle for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know that it is a privilege to have been raised with a full sibling that is closer to me than a parent, even. My brother, that's 2 years younger, he was adopted through Catholic Charities, too. He's not my biological brother. But, you know, we all kind of helped each other along with things growing up. I think because of the birth order situation, the three oldest of us were the adopted kids, and the younger kids looked up to us. And it was interesting, after I figured out my adoption story, and I wrote the story about it, Twice a Daughter, I gave my younger brothers and sisters copies, and 2 of 1, they said, we're so glad you did this, that you figured this out. You were due this information. And I think that's a wonderful state of affairs that everybody was supportive in the end. And then, of course, we all figured out we knew these people next door too. That helped. That helped the cause.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of unique components to your story. And I was reading a little bit about you do write a lot of blogs, and you're very comfortable to speak and share your different components of your story. And you talk about state law, having to change state law or campaign and lobby to state law, which is no mean feat. It's quite a thing. So did you sort of anticipate that you were going to sort of be drawn into these, you know, you thought you were going to just ask a question and all of a sudden you're then starting to have to try and campaign?
Yeah, I think I was pretty naive when I was going down the road of trying to find information. I just thought that I would be given the information. And there were all these gatekeepers, you know, the state law being what it was back then. When my intermediary reached out to my birth mom and she said, no, I don't want anything to do with the situation, that meant that we couldn't go back to her for any information. So we were stuck. Until she changed her mind, which the intermediary suggested that she probably would at some point. But because we didn't have her name, it wasn't accurate on our birth record, and we didn't have our birth father's name, we had to get a judge's order to go back to our birth mom and ask for just the medical history, which he did do. And I think that effort was kind of what tipped the scales. She thought about that for a long time. She sent all the information in through to the judge. And it took her a while to ask the question of the intermediary, are they okay? Are they healthy? So she did get worried about it. And that's how the conversation got, you know, we got exchanged letters and pictures, and then it was a phone call. And then we had this face-to-face meeting, which in my second book, it's called Belonging Matters, are just essays and essays about, you know, the adoption search, meeting parents and grandparents, and lots of stories about family. But I share that a friend of mine and I were sitting at lunch, and she asked me, what was the happiest moment in your life? Now, most people will say, oh, when I got married, when, you know, I held my first child in my arms. And certainly those were really happy moments. But I expected those things to happen. What I never expected was that I was going to meet my birth mother ever. So that day that I stood with her and my twin sister and saw her for the first time, heard her, you know, her voice and her laugh or whatever, was amazing, because I never thought it would happen. It was a surprise, one of life's little blessings.
Yeah, I mean, as you were talking there, you know, this, the idea that the door had been firmly slammed in your face, hadn't it? And that must have been, you know, to then sort of have to take legal action to get some, what is just rudimentary basic information, that must have been a big step to actually, would that feel like a big step? Because that's got the potential of, yeah, the door is shut, but that's got the potential of actually hammering the door shut, nailing it shut, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I found out through my DNA testing is I have a lot of Irish in me. So the Irish temper flared, and I was ready to go after her to get everything that was rightfully mine.
Right.
So, and then, you know, I had my sister helping me do that too. So, yeah.
Because I'm not saying you're sanitizing the story, but I think it, you know, there's obviously been some distance and time over it, but obviously the peaks and the troughs were probably quite pointy and quite, it sounds like there's some really difficult moments. And obviously you're, and I think my experience of talking to people who've shared their stories, they sort of have a very good account of their story, but sometimes we can lose the pain in that and the joy in that as well.
Yeah. Oh, it was wretched. And I just had a birthday, and I couldn't imagine why a mother didn't want to know their daughter, knowing full well it's their birthday. And so I reached out to Catholic Charities again and got in touch with a social worker. And I found out that they had a post-adoption support group at Catholic Charities in Chicago. And she encouraged me to join this group, which honestly is probably one of the most formative things that happened to me through this whole process, because we met quarterly in the orphanage where we were adopted from. That had been turned into a Catholic Charities relief services, and no more adoptions were being going on. And we met, and it was adoptive parents, birth parents, and adoptees and their loved ones. And we would meet, and I got to understand from the birth mothers in our group how hard it was for them to do what they did, have a pregnancy that was not respected by, you know, society, or how they were treated by their families for having gotten pregnant and not getting married. They shared their ideas about the loss and how hard it was to make that choice to place them for adoption. And so I got a different understanding about the things that my birth mom had gone through. Mm. I never brought my adoptive mom to those meetings. I really wasn't ready to pull her into the conversation at the time. But I got a lot of advice from adoptive parents that were in that group about how to talk to her. And I think we also, the adoptees in the group, imparted some wisdom with the adoptive parents in the group. I think they realized how hard it was for us to balance this love for them with this need to know where you came from, why you were placed for adoption, who your ancestors were. And so we all learned from each other. And that support group I write about all the time. Catholic Charities continues to minister to adoptees like me and anybody else that is trying to make connection with their birth relatives. And I think it's an important thing that they do.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, there's just this huge void in supporting adult adoptees. And I think that we're just seeing that it perhaps is built on the notion that it's a happy ever after. The child has moved on. But, you know, we've been through the stormy seas of early life, and now you're here. And that notion is just not true, is it?
Mm-mm. No, it's not true. And I think that's the beauty of these support groups. So one of the things that happened after I wrote Twice a Daughter, which came out in 2021. So it took me 10 years to write that book about this. I had to learn how to write a book and kind of make sense of my story at the same time, what to leave in and what to leave out. So I wrote the book, and I wrote it because people told me, gosh, this is such a great story. You know, people will want to read it. I wrote it because there were people like me, adoptees, that reached a brick wall, and I thought they could benefit from some of the strategies that I used, like the private investigator and the genealogist that found my birth father, and despite having wrong information about him. So I wrote it more like a how-to, but what ended up happening, as I talked to book clubs and have been on other podcasts, is there's usually somebody listening that knows somebody that would be helped by the story. For example, I do a lot of journaling, and I did a lot of journaling growing up. So I was speaking to this journaling society, and a woman from Australia joined the call. So she was 12 hours time difference from us. She'd gotten up at the crack of dawn to listen to me talk about the book. And she started to cry on the call. She said, I didn't know until I read your book that support groups for people like me, and that broke my heart when she said people like me, so I could tell she was still broken about what had happened to her. And I found one here in Australia that just deals with birth moms. And so the story was not just my story. The story was helping adoptive parents to understand what's in an adoptee's head and their needs and their desires and the heartbreak that they have. But it's also helping birth moms and people that have family members that are adopted or touched by adoption. You know, there's always somebody that says to me, oh, my sister placed a child for adoption when she was a teenager, and she's thinking about going back and trying to find that child, but she's afraid. There's always a conversation about adoption. We all know somebody that's touched in some way. And I think the more we talk about how hard this is for all the little players in the circle, the better understanding we have of everybody's perspectives.
Yeah. You mentioned your father there, and I know your story, it has a very different sort of outcome in terms of your birth father. So can you share a little bit about that? Because that was a...
Yeah. So my birth mom gave me the wrong name for my birth father.
And did she do that on purpose?
We didn't want to ask her.
Right.
We knew it was a little bit off. We're in this new relationship, and we thought, well, if we pin her down on this, she could get mad, and then, you know, that jeopardizes the little honeymoon that we're on.
Everything is so complicated.
It is. So we didn't pin her down on it. I hired this genealogist, gave her all the paperwork I had and information. As it turned out, the genealogist lived in the same town that where my birth parents met. And she knew all the people that were in charge of all the records. So she went down to the city records and pulled the files. And she found somebody, she said, who your mom told you is your birth father. It's not him, but there's this other guy. So she gave me all the information, and I hired an attorney, and we drafted a letter, and I sent this letter to this man, who it turned out only lived 2 hours away. He was a college professor. And I asked him if, you know, would you submit to DNA? I've got these health issues. I want to get my records. He said, I may or may not be. Here's the medical history that could be yours. But what he did do, so I never met him. He told his two kids, my sister and my brother, that there's this woman out there. This is the situation. And my brother called me. What is this about? And we figured it out. My brother and I figured it out. He tried for 4 years to convince my birth father that he should meet my sister and I. Hmm. My birth father had remarried. The wife didn't want anything to do with it. And he had a heart attack and died before I ever met him. And an interesting side note about that part of the family and the identity piece about being an adoptee. I grew up in a family that was Irish Catholic. I didn't have any idea if I was Catholic or Irish, but I took that identity on, always wondering, though, am I really, or am I really something else? And I think that's a big thing that adoptees do worry about. It's this a little bit of an imposter syndrome. I'm pretending I'm this person, but am I really that person? And that's hard for us. We work really hard on trying to figure out where we stand on that. So I'm thinking I'm this Irish Catholic, and it turns out, yes, Irish Catholic, German, French, but we also found out what we also are is Native American. That was in none of the records. I'm in my 60s. I'm still trying to get my hands around the fact that I have a great-great-grandmother that was a Chippewa princess. You know, yeah. Life just comes up with more and more surprises. Mm. I have enough Native American in me that if my birth father's name had been on my birth certificate, I could join the White Earth Nation. But because his name is not on there, I do not have a ticket for entry. So can't change that fact.
Yeah, as you were talking, and you mentioned all of these barriers, then steps, and all of them sort of involve money. And I was just thinking, have you ever put a sort of a financial number on how much what it's cost you to get what is rightfully your own, which is all of this information?
I don't say that out of a
mawkish, but just kind of like to say, actually, yeah. That does that potentially mean it's not accessible to some adoptees?
It probably cost my sister and I $2,000 to $3,000, but the agency that I used with the intermediary was a state-funded agency. Right. We didn't have much of a cost at all. And they were the ones that really broke our case open. And that's in the state of Illinois. I think more and more states are helping adoptees like me access their relatives. Interesting, because you talk about fostering a lot too. The same agency will also help kids that were in the foster care system in Illinois connect with families they lived with. They bounced around a lot. They, you know, connected with somebody and then they moved to a different family or they were placed back with their biological parents. A lot of times those connections were lost, and this same agency helps those individuals make connections with their past too, which is a beautiful thing at no cost.
Yeah, that's it. That's excellent. And maybe sort of final few questions, really. I was thinking we chatted initially before we came on, and you were mentioning the work you do now and or the support you give now to an adoption agency, and oftentimes social media is the worst of things and the best of things. There's a lot of negative views on social media in terms of, and there's a lot of people who've got very strong opinions about adoption, negative opinions, and they often they get a lot of they create a lot of froth around that. So where do you stand now then on adoption? And you mentioned you do actually work for an agency. What do you do?
So I am on a very small adoption agency in the Chicago area. And I'm the only adoptee on the board. All the other board members are adoptive parents, which is not surprising. It's astonishing to me that, you know, the adoption landscape is changing so much. Surrogacy is a really growing field. Parents, biological parents, want to have their biological child. And there's so many women that are willing to do IVF and carry a fetus that is not theirs for a fee. So that's a very growing industry, less so adoptions. Certainly foster care is up. There's so many families that aren't able to keep their children and then they find other homes. Relative adoptions are up too. So, you know, any auntie or grandparent will adopt their biological offspring. So it's fascinating for me to stay up with the statistics about it. Genetic genealogy is another thing that I find fascinating. When I was looking for my personal history, it wasn't in a good place. So 23andMe and Ancestry.com matched me with third, fourth, fifth cousins. So there, you know, I wasn't making any connection. But nowadays, people do kind of happenstance into learning, oh, my dad is not my dad. This other man, it looks like, is my father. So there's a lot of information, I think, that's surprising people. I really like the fact that I used an intermediary to kind of help both sides of the equation work through figuring out how it was going to work with reuniting or making connection. I think sometimes we need that expert in between us to kind of help us think through what we want to think about it. I mean, not everybody wants to connect with a biological sibling. And so some coaching there is helpful.
So your views on adoption, what do you think? I mean, it's the society has changed, but what do you still see it in positive terms, negative terms, or is it more complex?
What I see is positive. When I was a kid growing up, I didn't know anybody else that was adopted. So we didn't talk about it a lot. And I didn't really know what I thought about it. I knew I loved my family, but I knew that, you know, there was this whole other family out there that I couldn't connect with. I think where we are now with the barriers to knowledge kind of coming down, I think that's a wonderful thing. Mm. I'm also a very faithful spiritual person. So I think I ended up exactly where I needed to be. I'll give you an example. My parents, when they were trying to start their family, my dad was in the service and they were stationed in Germany. They took a leave weekend and went to Lourdes, France. And because they were very faithful, they prayed for a family. When they came back to the United States, they had more miscarriages and infertility, decided to adopt. So they get the call that these two twin girls are ready and waiting for them at this orphanage in downtown Chicago. And they make arrangements to come get us. And then a month or two later, after many sleepless nights, my mom opened her little missal and to search for the feast day associated with our birthday. And our birthday is the feast of Our Lady of Lourdes, which is where our parents prayed for a family to begin. So because I am a faithful person, I believe that the best outcome happened for me. And I have had a beautiful life. Has it been perfect? No. Was adoption fair with all the gatekeepers? No. Would I have been benefited from knowing about my birth family growing up, which is something open adoption allows people to have? Absolutely. So my blinders are off about the whole situation. I was born in different times. But in general, I mean, I felt loved and supported, and I have this amazing relationship with my twin sister, and she was not taken away from me. And I think that's the biggest blessing that came out of my adoption.
Julie, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's been fascinating, and I think you've sort of shone a light into lots of interesting things that I think, especially a UK audience listening, this, all these sort of system differences and culture differences that are really fascinating. And I thank you for being so open and honest. And I wish you a great rest of the day. And I will put a link to all of your websites and your books and everything into the show notes so people can find you. But just quickly, I'll let you say it. What is your website?
JulieMcGhughAuthor.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time, and look after yourself.
Thank you. You as well.